Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. You know what my favorite text is? A waypoint in the Onyx Hunt app to a goblin turkey. The list on the Onyx Hunt app features for chasing turkeys is long, but knowing exact public and private boundaries and land ownership details will help you find more places to hunt, whether that's on public or private. I'll be toting the Hunt app through the spring woods in a few states this year, and I recommend you do the same if you want more turkeys on your table. Also, Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple. Gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more. My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
Josh.
Yes.
What about Jeremiah Johnson?
Okay, so last week I apparently slowed down just enough for COVID to catch up with me. I have been running hard for 3.5 years and have managed to dodge it. And for the very first time ever, I get COVID. Mm. And I'm laying in bed, feeling terrible, and I thought, I was actually scrolling through one of my movie streaming services. I don't remember which one it was. And lo and behold, what pops up? Jeremiah Johnson. And I thought, I need a little pick-me-up.
Yeah.
So I kick that bad boy on, and, you know, he rolls off the riverboat there, and I'm thinking, this is just going to be awesome.
You've never seen it
before?
I've
never seen it.
Okay.
Fighting bear. I'm sure there's going to be bear fights. I'm sure there's going to be shooting game. You know, I'm just really looking forward to it. Having been a kid who grew up on the Wilderness Family. Have you guys remember those movies, The Wilderness Family?
Yeah.
I mean, those were like the greatest movies ever when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I've seen that thing 100 times. So, and then a few minutes later, Christy comes in, lays down, and she starts watching it, and she's like, now what's going on? What's going on? So I kind of give her a quick rundown, and she starts watching it with me. Talk about an emotional roller coaster.
Oh, that's a toughie. Spoiler alert. Is everybody in here seeing it?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Jeremiah Johnson,
the movie.
Never seen it.
No.
Oh my
god! I
thought it was a hay farmer.
It's considered one of the American greats.
Okay. You are.
It's Robert Redford. Is a frontiersman.
You're Josh's Mississippi in education. We're always just one step ahead of Mississippi.
But
so Josh has finally seen the movie, and you had.
I was.
Well, what stood out to you? What was the most significant thing about the movie?
We are about to spoil this movie.
Yeah,
the movie was made in 1974.
Okay,
You've had plenty of time,
or whenever it was made.
I thought it was going to be like, again, having been raised on the Wilderness Family, I thought it was going to be a great, you know, surely there had to be something redeeming in the end. And in the end, the redeeming thing was the hand up by the lone Indian there, and he waves back. But the The death and destruction, man.
You just felt like it was a lot of death and destruction.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see the... Until, you know, he gets the look on his face when he's in the burial ground.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, they're going to kill his wife and boy.
He knew what was coming.
And, yeah.
Well,
But it was a great movie. Very well done.
1972.
I have to be honest and say I did have to turn on the subtitles a couple times just to catch everything that was said.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
So Will Primos, who was on this episode of the Mississippi River Bear Grease, is a big, big Jeremiah Johnson movie buff. He has, in his office, he has some original photography from the set.
Oh, cool.
That, like, nobody else has. And he is a big time Jeremiah Johnson.
This is for Robert Redford and that beard.
It's a good beard.
That's a good beard.
Makes a good meme to send to people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome to the Bear. Yeah. Welcome to the Bear Grease render, everybody.
That's the one.
If you are new to the Bear Grease universe, the Bear Grease render is where we talk about the actual Bear Grease podcast, which is our documentary style podcast. This week, we had I loved the episode. I learned so much about the Mississippi River. So we're going to talk about that. But before that, we have some very special guests this week on the Bear Grease render.
Dun, dun, dun,
to my right,
dun, dun,
we have Josh Lambridge, Spillmaker. Old
nice
Faithful.
Nice to be here. Nice to be here.
Fly fishing extraordinaire.
Yes.
Mustache.
Spent the morning
in case
fly
somebody
fishing.
has just been on another planet. Josh's nickname, Lambridge, came about circa 2008 when one day at a meeting at our church, I looked at Josh. And his mustache inspired me to read a book on the Bering Land Bridge.
Shampoo.
This is not a joke. I mean, for real, I'm literally talking to the guy and I'm looking at this huge mustache that spanned the right cheek to the left cheek.
Alaska to Russia.
Of his face.
Yeah, it was like Alaska and Russia. And I was like,
Sarah Palin saw it and was impressed.
Sarah Palin.
I said, I know nothing about the Bering Land Bridge. And I went and bought a book that's up here called Beringia.
Yeah.
And so, Josh. To Josh's right, our dear friend, longtime friend, Terrell Spence Spencer.
Could I change the Spence for Thalwag?
Ooh, that's a good name.
Yeah.
That's a good name. Terrell Thalwag Spencer. At the bottom. The Thalwag means the bottom of the river. Spence is our local pastured poultry man across the creek farms. Good to have you. Spence has been on here several times. He's been a featured guest on the Bear Grease podcast. Unlike some of us, yeah. We're going to skip over the mystery guest and go to Brent Reeves,
Yo.
This Country Life. Good to see you, brother.
Good to be here.
How you doing?
Good. Great.
Podcast, great. How's This Country Life?
Good, man.
Rocking and rolling?
It gets better and better.
Getting better and better.
Yeah.
Brent Reeves is an incredible writer. You might not know it, but the writing... Like this Country Life podcast, which is also on this Bear Grease feed. If you're paying attention, you know this. If you're not, you do now. If you're paying attention now, so Brent has a podcast that comes out every Friday on the Bear Grease feed. It's about 20-30 minutes long, and this would be something that he would write out. I mean, you don't really sense that when you're listening. It just sounds like a story, but it's actually written out. And Brent can
really
take something
good.
That's not
it's fantastic.
It's really,
you
really
wouldn't
good.
Think you were that interested in, like, watermelons.
I thought that watermelon podcast was fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Josh.
Yeah.
It's actually been my favorite one so far.
I honestly, it's in the running for me.
It's and what it is when you get down to the granular nature of it really is excellent writing.
Yeah.
Yes. Brent, do you want to tell them how the watermelon podcast came about?
Yeah, you and I were coming back from, matter of fact, what we're talking about right now.
Mississippi River episode.
We went down there with talked to Dr. David, you have to pronounce his last
Bidenhorn.
Name. Bidenhorn. Yeah, Bidenhorn. And we were on the way back and we just started talking about, you know, what's the next podcast going to be about? We started kicking ideas around. He said, you know what you ought to do? Watermelons. And he said, I don't care what you do, but I want this included in it. I said, all right, what's that? He said, Clay Newcomb. Have vowed to myself to eat a watermelon every day of watermelon season.
It is true. It's true. It's
now, just to clarify, it's not a whole watermelon.
Some watermelon.
It's some watermelon. Well, no, really, we were deep in the heart of watermelon country. I bought a watermelon this week at in Arkansas that was grown in Mississippi.
What?
Yeah, it had grown in Mississippi on it. We were deep in the heartland of watermelon country, and I just said, Brant, I really want to hear you talk about watermelons.
Yeah,
it was and so fantastic. That's what he did. So it was great.
You might have heard of the Whole 30.
Yeah.
And, you know, where like you do this horrible restrictive diet for 30 days really that ruins it. Your family's life.
Yeah.
And in the hopes of like cleansing your body from whatever. Anyway.
Demons.
Yeah. It might bring some out. But Clay does a watermelon 30.
Yeah. Watermelon 60 from it's July really 1st to August 30th.
And when he's doing the watermelon 30,
you don't look like this on accident.
The kids and I have committed to doing an ice
She's
cream
been
30,
in one.
Where we ice cream all 30 days of during this. There's a parallel
watermelon
to watermelon cream. 30 is ice cream 30.
When so to Brent's, we're still on intros here.
Oh, wow.
I've got to speed it up here. We're 8 minutes deep. To Brent's right, my lovely wife, Misty Newcomb. Great to have you, Dr. Newcomb.
Thank you. So good to be here.
Yes.
Thank you for that formal introduction.
Yes, yes. But our mystery guest is Ryan Flintface.
I knew that
man.
Was coming.
Hey, if you've been paying attention to Bear Hunting Magazine stuff that I've done in the last decade, Ryan Grebb is one of my dear friends from for a long time. We've been buddies. And Ryan is, man, to describe, okay, first of all, Flint Face. The first time I saw a picture of Ryan, it was on the Arkansas Game and Fish website, and they just randomly selected his photo of a bear he'd killed to be on the page. Do you remember that?
I do. And I found it on accident. I was like, no, I don't want to be the face of the bear page.
So, yeah, he was the face of the Game and Fish bear page, and it was this beautiful photo, this huge bear, and he just had a face like Flint. I mean, like, wouldn't crack a smile. And for every picture, I've got him to smile since then, but he Ryan doesn't do much smiling in the photos. But Ryan, I told Bear this the other day. There's not many people in this state that are better outdoorsmen than Ryan Grebb.
That's quite a
I mean, big.
Just
accolade.
Like, you want to talk deer hunting, you want to talk bear hunting, you want to talk catfishing, you want to talk turkey hunting, you want to talk food plots, you want to talk anything. This guy is
boy,
good
I got y'all
at what
fooled.
He does.
Subject matter.
I've got y'all fooled.
Yeah, yeah. No, okay. I got to keep going with Ryan though. I still stand by this. And if somebody proves me wrong, that's great. I like to throw out big stats, and then if somebody can prove me wrong, then that's great. I think Ryan Grebb has killed more bear per weight than anybody in that's alive in Arkansas today.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
Weight like his weight?
Like, yeah, like comparing his weight like his? To...
No. Yeah. Like, Ryan has killed...
More bear pounds.
Pounds per...
Pounds per...
Pounds of bear.
He's killed more pounds,
pounds of bear,
period.
Per person.
Yeah.
Pounds of bear per person.
We're looking for the ratio.
Killed. I mean, there's a lot of guys that have killed big bears, and certainly some incredible bear hunters that have killed, like, you know, they've killed like 2 500-pound bears, and then you know, some 300s and this and this and this. Ryan has killed. I mean, we don't have to get into the details, but lots of for 25 years,
biggins.
He's killed big
biggins,
ones.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've laid off of them the last 3, 4, 5 years, so I'm sure somebody's
give them a fighting chance.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, you were hunting bears in the glory years of the Arkansas bear days, though.
Yeah.
When you're baiting bears, it gets harder and harder. I mean, I'm pretty solidified on that statement. I'm not saying it's you can't kill a big bear in Arkansas anymore. People do every year.
Right.
But the first 10, 12 years when we could bait bears, it was you were
a learning curve for them. Yeah.
Now every bear that's alive has their whole life been under some baiting sequence.
It was easy the first 5, 6, 7 years, you know.
Yeah.
But now you've got generations of bears that is born and raised into the baiting game, and
it's a different bear now.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And just more people out in
smarter
the woods
than your average bears.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, I want you to tell us the story of when that cub, you told this to River and Bear the other day. I don't want to spoil the story. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. And I'd actually had forgotten about that. Sitting in the tree, middle of the day. I'd sitting all day.
You're bear hunting.
Bear hunting, yes. And it was hot. you know, gnats biting you, 90 degrees. And I just look down the hill and I see bear coming. Here comes another one. I was like, oh, it's Sal. Well, it ends up being triplets, you know.
Sal cubs, with three cubs.
Three cubs. And they come up there and feed around, you know, do their moaning and squalling. And I think I'd kind of forgotten about this till they brought it up the other day. I think the sow winded me, went to popping her jaws, and one cub took off running and ran right to my tree, scurried right up past me, and got even with me, and I scared it, and it ran out on the end of this limb. It got way out there to where he couldn't hold no more. And he was trying and trying and trying. He fell off, hit so hard he bounced like a basketball.
Oh, my.
Knocked him silly. He took off running towards his mom and siblings and ran head on into an oak tree and knocked it silly again and laid there like it just, I was like, he just killed himself. Wow. But he gathered his thoughts and off he went.
Survival of the fittest.
You were probably 20 plus?
I was probably 22, 23 feet up.
So the cub runs up the tree, sees you, like yes. You could have like poked it in the eyeballs.
Yeah.
And it runs out on the limb, falls out of the tree, bounces correct. Like a basketball from a 22, 23-foot fall.
Yes, sir.
And sprints towards his mom and T-bones an oak tree.
Like he never seen the tree. I guess he just...
As I should.
Yeah. And he hit it hard.
Wow.
And like I say, just knocked him for a loop. He had to gather his thoughts and off he went. And I was like... Well, that was my fun for the afternoon.
I was like watching cartoons.
Right. Yeah.
What's the biggest bear you've killed in Arkansas? Well, in anywhere, but I think the answer will be in Arkansas.
Was it 508 or 508. Something?
Yeah, that's a big bear.
Yeah.
I shot one
big anything.
The next year. The 508, I didn't think was all that big when I shot it. The next year, I'm talking a true monster come in, and I was like, if this bear ain't 600 pounds, you know, and I had it 10, 12 yards, thought I made a perfect shot, and never found the bear.
Huh.
And I would love to go back in time to that day to do all over
again.
Yeah.
Probably shot it too low.
I think I hit it too far forward is what I think.
Yeah. Too far forward?
Too far forward, yeah.
How big do bears get in Arkansas, Oklahoma? Like, what would be the record?
I mean, there's no weight record keeping systems because it's too arbitrary
okay.
in terms of having certified scales and gutted weight versus right. live weight. So that's not the way people measure them. But I have heard of a 650 pound bear that I think was legitimate. Have you heard of any bigger than that? Arkansas
bear?
No, I haven't.
So this was up there. That it was.
Yeah, that would be pushing
a big move.
It had it had the frame monsters, pigeon-toed, big blockhead, but its belly was pretty much dragging the ground.
Wow!
He literally, there was a fence, a forest fence, and the bottom strands was broke, and I can't remember if there's one strand or two strands above it. He got down on his elbows and pulled himself under, not with his front feet, with his elbows when he come onto the property.
Mm-hmm.
That's 3.5-4 feet.
Yeah, but it was a monster, a true monster.
Yeah, they can for sure weigh over 600 here, you know. But it's uncommon.
That would be abnormal, though.
It would be abnormal, yeah, for sure. But they make them that big, man. They make them that big. They do. What's your most memorable bear hunt, Ryan?
Probably the booner I killed up here in zone one on a buddy's place had the old rock fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, that's some beautiful pictures.
Yeah. That was, never cool even got place. In the tree. Just as I was sneaking into the bait, I seen him making his way up to the bait and I lost sight of him and I was like, well, to back out of here.
You went in there at like 1 o'clock.
Yeah, because I kept getting pictures of this bear. He never would come at night. He always showed up in the day, like every hour of the day, except I noticed from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock, I wouldn't get no pictures of him. I was like, that's when I need to ease in. Well, as I'm easing in there, I'm 40 yards from the bait site, my stand, and I see him come up out of the woods to the bait. But there's so much foliage I couldn't, lost sight of him. So I thought, should I back out, go to the top of the hill, give him half hour, ease back down here, see if he's left? But I'm like, I'm practically in bow range as it is. The wind is right. I want to see if I can ease up and get a shot at him. So I took my boots off, sock feet, eased up there, got within about 12 yards, and I couldn't see him, but I could hear him. I could hear him smacking.
Golly, I bet you was geared up.
There was goldenrod, yellow flowers, and he was behind that. That was blocking my view, and I spotted him at 12 yards, but he's laying down. So I eased up there a little closer, and there's one window between these goldenrods. I thought, if he will turn, I can slip an arrow through that little 4-inch window. And the bear never got up. He pulled himself around, and while he's laying on the ground, and reached in the hole in the barrel to grab more bait out. And when he did, I put one right behind his armpit,
pulling his
arm
up.
And that was that bear weighed 3.
No, it was
420.
420 something, yeah.
And he had a over 20-inch skull.
20, you scored at 20 and 5 or 20 something.
5 sixteenths or something, which is over the Boone and Crockett minimum.
Right.
Yeah, that's a hoss.
Yeah. And what's wild about all these bears is you can kill a 500-pound bear that doesn't make Boone and Crockett.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
The biggest bear that I ever killed, Boone and Crockett score, weighed 355 or something.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And then the biggest weight bear that I've ever killed weighed 550 and
did not Batman.
Make Boone and Crockett.
Batman. Didn't make Boone and Crockett?
He did not make Boone and Crockett.
Huh.
So is it just the frame or like?
Well, they're measuring the skull. So for a bear, you measure the length and width of the skull. So part of it is genetic. Just like I might have a bigger head than you,
right?
Even though you're taller than me.
Let's not if. You do have a bigger head.
I have
head
a big
him.
Head.
I got a watermelon for a noggin.
Yeah,
too.
Spence ain't
Spencer's
exactly.
Spencer's a big-headed people.
Yeah. it's kind of like that. And then, I still really haven't decided. I have never talked to anybody that gave me a biologist, anybody in the country, that has given me a legitimately scientific answer of whether a bear adds mass to his skull with age. Do you understand? Because people have that idea. Oh, that's a 20-year-old bear. He's going to be Boone and Crockett. Not necessarily. Because if he was a smaller skulled bear or an average skulled bear, but there's an idea that their skulls get bigger or widen or thicken with time. And I've yet to find a biologist, including some really top-level guys, that have been able to tell me whether a bear really, his skull gets bigger. But, one. Maybe not the last, maybe just the start. Another story with Ryan. The kids told me, y'all talked about this the other day. Ryan took our kids noodling this week while I was in Montana.
That's pretty awesome.
Ryan was taking my kids fishing.
Yeah, I'll just say, I think it's the coolest thing because our kids, they've gone with Ryan and Clay since they were little. I'm trying to think about the first time River went. She was
probably 12.
A little dainty thing at that time. I mean,
she told me she was 12 years old.
Was she 12?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'd actually never heard of noodling before. And I would tell people, yeah, River's going noodling. And they would all look at me and be like, River's going noodling this afternoon? And I said, yeah. And so people kept, I learn a lot by watching people's faces and how they respond to stuff. So I came home and they were getting in the car.
I try not to let on if anything's abnormal.
Yeah.
Like, we're going rattlesnake hunting. We'll see you later.
I just kind of trust Clay. So they're getting in the car. I come home from work and they're getting in the car. And I said, hey, they're literally pulling out backwards. I said, hey, this is safe, isn't it? Because people just kept going, River's going noodling.
And Ryan was like,
are you concerned?
Yeah.
No, Ryan was there. Clay looked at me, and this is, I promise, he hits the car in reverse. They're starting to pull off, and he goes, hey, we'll see ya. And then they just pull out. And I was like, well, I guess, truly he wouldn't put our daughter in danger, but our daughter's been in the ER off the back of Clay's mules. Yeah. A lot. So I don't know if I should be trusting. That ship has sailed now. But at that time, when she was 12, I trusted him.
Hey, the most dangerous thing about noodling in the warm weather is probably flesh-eating amoebas in the water.
Oh, don't.
I think about that from time to time. One of these days, you know,
come back.
One of these is going to crawl up my nose.
Yeah, there's. I remember one year we went and somebody had like maybe died.
Yeah. Well, they usually do.
Yeah. From just being in that nasty water. It wasn't in this water system we were in, but it was like kind of in the realm of where we're at.
I hate this story.
And I mean, it's like, what are
in
you going to do, though? Are you
just gonna say yeah and pull back in reverse? Yeah. No need
just
to share. That thought
Misty
never entered my
lie.
Mind.
Amoeba.
So Ryan and his buddies have, they're big time noodlers.
And now our kids just kind of bypass Clay and call Ryan.
Go straight to the horse's mouth.
Yeah. Don't even care if Clay's in town.
Clay called me and said, hey, you got to get my kids out of the house. River's watching the Kardashians.
No!
Bear's playing Fortnite. You got to get them involved in something.
He's like, I got you, Clay. Oh, they had a great time, though. Now, we've had a lot of fun over the years. And, you know, y'all rarely keep a fish.
No.
I mean, like, hardly ever. I catch so many fish and rarely keep a fish. When the Newcombs go noodling, we keep a fish.
Keep them all. Yeah. It's like when Spencers go fishing.
We don't keep them all, but yeah. We usually keep one big flathead a year
that
will have a big fish fry, well, multiple fish fries.
Right.
And so anyway, we like some flathead.
When I talked to Clay yesterday, I was like, I'm sure there's no flathead left and you're probably just gnawing on the head or the spine or something like that by now.
Taking turns on the tail.
Yeah.
So the story that I want Ryan to tell, us to tell, came because the kids reminded me of it. But when we were in Canada, and the first trip that I ever did for Bear Hunting Magazine, which kind of marked like an era of my life, when I started traveling and hunting, and for about a decade, I prioritized bear hunting over all other types of hunting and was traveling all over hunting. Just, it was an incredible time. That first year I had Bear Hunting Magazine, I got the opportunity to go to Ontario, Canada in the fall, and we put it together pretty quick, and Ryan was ready to go. I called Ryan, and he was like, let's go. And whose bear was it that you almost, do you know what I'm talking about? I don't want to give away the spoiler. We were loading a bear on the four-wheeler. Was it my bear?
Yours, yeah.
Okay. Well, we go with this outfitter, and we weren't incredibly impressed at first just by the looks of where we were at. It was kind of a do-it-yourself deal. They gave you a camper and some bear bait and had some places set up and just were kind of like, you're on your own, which we knew that. So we were happy, very happy about that. But we hunted for 2 or 3 days and just hadn't seen much. And finally, on the third day, they didn't have cameras out or anything. And on the third day, I kill a giant bear. I mean, just a giant, one of the biggest bears I've ever killed.
It was a whopper.
We weren't able to weigh it, but we were shocked. And I killed it with my trad bow. And Ryan and I were kind of thinking we were going to go home skunked. And so easily 400 plus.
We did weigh it.
Did we weigh it?
432 or something.
You're
like
right.
That.
You're right. We did weigh it. 430 yeah. something.
Yeah.
432 on the hoof.
Remember, add the
2%. I'm real cautious about weights. I was thinking we didn't weigh it.
On the hoof?
Yeah. Guts and all.
It had the biggest front pads of any bear I've ever seen. I mean, it was huge.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it did not score Boone and Crockett. It green scored before drying. 20 1/16 and dried under 20.
Oh, wow.
But it was a great bear. 9 years old.
Is 20 the cutoff?
20 is the Boone and Crockett minimum. 21 is the all-time.
Okay.
It's a complicated story. But we're loading this bear up on a four-wheeler. 400. We'd gutted it by now, so it weighed less than that. We're putting it on the rack of a four-wheeler. And what happened?
Y'all were on the ground going to lift. I got up on top of the four-wheeler. Which his four-wheeler had like a bed on the back of it.
A rack.
Yeah. And I was going to pull as they were going to lift. Well, this bear weighing 400-something pounds, you think, well, it's going to be a struggle. Well, when it was 1, 2, 3, I pulled, they lifted. Well, that come up way too fast. I had 1 foot in the bed of that four-wheeler, and they put that bear up on my leg and pushed me off the four-wheeler. Well, everything went off the four-wheeler except my left
foot. His left foot is on the rack, up against the rack. The bear comes over the top and pins his foot on the rack, and Ryan falls off the four-wheeler.
Is that a desirable place to be?
No, man. It had a like a bed, like a wall.
Like a six-inch.
Yeah.
Did it break your leg?
I thought it did.
Man. Hey, when I saw it happen, I still cringe when I think about it. Because I thought our trip to Canada is about to get really weird because we're going to be going to a Canadian hospital and Ryan's broke. I mean, I didn't know how it would be physically possible because his foot never moved and his body is on the ground. Like, I still to this day don't know how it didn't break your leg.
I still don't have – I've got an ankle bone here. This one don't show anymore.
Hold on. Let's see. Let's see.
You got two ankles.
Oh, you can see it right there.
There's an ankle bone here. No, not one there.
It's like it shifted over. Does it feel funny?
No.
Can you see in the dark?
Yeah.
Powers out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was bad. I just knew it was going to be bad. And he just kind of – bounces up and just kind of like limps around for a minute, and he's like, "All right, we're good."
Man. Now you know why he don't smile.
The next morning it was sore. That's when I was like, "Yeah."
It was sore the next day.
I was like at the threshold of something was fixed to shatter.
Man,
yeah.
Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released, so head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a gobbling turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this spring. We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that's stood the test of time: Seafoam motor treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. You pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
All right. Well, Mississippi River Podcast, You guys don't know it, but there's a quiz.
I knew it.
Ah,
we're gonna. So
I'm not doing well.
We just started a 3-part series, Mississippi River. It's gonna be a significant series. Let me start off by saying this is one of the hardest series that I've ever done, because everybody. Well, first of all, if you're gonna tell a story about the Mississippi River, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like it's not like David Crockett or something really specific. There's always, you know, with that, there's this definitive data that you have. The Mississippi River is just a big story. And I just knew there was kind of a hole in my understanding of this country by not knowing a lot about the Mississippi River. So I started going to experts. And I knew there were certain categories of interest that I had, which I wanted to know about the natural system of the river, you know, just as it stands as a natural feature, like the Rocky Mountains, the Mississippi River, the Pacific Ocean, you know. So I wanted to understand the dynamics of the river, number one. Number two, I wanted to understand the culture, how that river has influenced culture, particularly on the lower Mississippi. That's where most of my interest lay. And so I knew I needed to talk to people. I also wanted to learn about the fishery of the Mississippi River. Like, I'm interested in the wildlife and the fisheries. And so I started going to all these different people, and everybody was so knowledgeable about their one little section that it was sometimes hard to get a picture as big as I needed to get. And John Barry, oh man. Now, he was the man. There's probably not been a guest on Bear Grease that would be as, he's a big time writer that has nothing to do with hunting per se. And so Misty went with me to Washington, D.C. to interview John Barry for an hour. And that book, Steve Rinella is the one who told me when I said, hey, I'm going to interview John Barry, author of Rising Tide. Rinella was like, hey, when you look at like top 10 lists of American nonfiction, he said Rising Tide's always there. He's like, wow. That's like a incredible book of, so having John Barry on was really interesting. Yeah. He's a really interesting guy too.
Yeah.
So I say all that to say, I kept, now excluding John Barry, who had this kind of very general, like big knowledge, like, I just kept going to different people. I think I interviewed 7 different people, like full interviews, like hour and a half plus interviews, and building the series. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's pretty tough. But I want to, you know what? My labor, I want to see if it was in vain or not.
Uh-oh.
I want to know if you guys were even paying attention, because I'm not sure if you were or not. This will be the third quiz that we've done.
Josh cheats.
Hold on.
No, you hold on, Jack.
I don't cheat.
Yeah, you do.
You're the cheater.
You can't count.
The on the podcast, on the last render, you were like, okay, we're going to do a quiz. Then we never did it.
I know.
Well, we did a quiz for Clay on Choleria. Trying to identify what Choleria was.
Yeah, we were going to do a quiz, but the conversation was just so rich, riveting. Felt like the quiz would have gotten in the way.
So there's two quizzes.
Quizzes. We're doing a Crockett quiz. So the way this works is the first person that blurts out the right answer gets the point. All right.
I hate that.
I think there's 7.
How do you want
to
do it?
You want to submit the answer by email?
Yes. Text. I think you should raise your hand.
Hand is.
What if everybody had a buzzer or a squeaky toy?
Oh, I think we need a.
Like Family Feud style.
Yeah.
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 I could get shakers.
Shakers. But then everybody would shake just nonstop. Okay. I think this is what we're going to have to do.
We can make our own beeping. Josh, what's your sound?
Okay, first question. Here we go. I believe there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, man. 6, 7, 8 questions. The one at the end of this with the most points wins.
Okay, I feel very underprepared.
The first one is going to be some low-hanging fruit.
You're supposed to listen
what
to it,
is
Josh.
The foul wag of a river?
The deepest point of the channel.
Terrell Spencer, deepest point of the channel. You got to blurt it out.
When I take people fishing on my river, I tell them about foul wag.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This
so
is
you
like,
knew this before.
Yeah, I wanted to be friends with
I
that
think you
guy.
Should get an extra point just for
just
already
the two
knowing
of us.
What it meant.
The foul wag.
The foul wag.
Yeah. It's Brent
my new
and I
middle
are
name. No
boat.
More Spence.
Brent and I are getting
Spence
a
is dead. Foul wag lives.
He has a. He definitely has a competitive advantage today.
Yes.
Because Malachi Nichols wouldn't be a boat partner with me. Me and Brent are getting a boat.
You traded up, buddy.
Yeah. And we were going to name it the foul wag.
So that gets awkward now.
That was never an option.
Well, but then I was like, you don't want to name your boat the bottom of the river.
It was the submarine.
So I'm going to go ahead and say this. This is going to be big news in the future. Most likely the name of our boat is going to be the Laurentide.
The Laurentide?
Come on.
You took a lot of shots at the Laurentide.
How
you didn't like that?
How cool
Were
of a
offended?
Name is that?
I wasn't
the
offended,
Laurentide. The Laurentide ice sheet.
Yeah.
2 mile thick ice sheet
See,
that carved
I
out
feel
the
like you're talking
River
you were
Basin.
Taking a lot of shots and now you're praising it and I
Well
don't,
no. I
you,
didn't ever say anything negative
yeah,
about
yeah.
the Laurentide ice sheet.
You were,
I just said
you
it seems kind of arrogant
you
to me that we would name it like it was a pet.
I feel like you didn't really appreciate all the topsoil we have.
In your face.
No. Yeah. I'm a big-time Laurentide ice sheet fan.
If you had a garden up in that holler, you would appreciate alluvial
Spence
soil.
Spence lives up the holler from me, and he claims I stole all his soil. Because I lived down low.
And for the record, both of you guys have the same degree? Environmental soil science?
So. Environmental soil and water science?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty close.
I went to grad school for stream ecology. So.
What we ought to do, Ryan,
stream ecology. I forgot
put them
about
in a
that,
jar yeah. and shake them up and see if they'll fight.
Right. Like two beta fish.
No,
55 gallon
If
drill.
It came across as negative about the Laurentide ice sheet,
okay.
it wasn't. I just was making note of no human. Like it actually has no correlation to like thinking.
It is crazy.
It's
amazing.
No Amazing. Human that we've had correspondence with actually saw it, but we know it was here because of the cryptic diary of the Earth. You know, it's interesting
the
stuff.
Cryptic diary of the Earth.
One for Terrell.
Foul wag Spencer.
Foul wag Spencer. This might stick. What is the name for a concrete mat placed on the riverbank to stop erosion?
Revetment.
Who said that?
I did.
Brent Reeves.
What was it?
Revetment.
Revetment. Ah. Brent Reeves, 1. Foul wag, 1.
I mean, you got Josh.
Ryan Greg, 0. Josh, 0. Misty, 0.
If it comes a fly fishing, he'll get it.
I had COVID.
So it made your brain a little foggy while you were listening to this?
Yeah, COVID fog.
River Park. Hey, Josh has a real boat. He has a brand
a
new boat.
What's the name
you
of
You
got
to name your boat.
SS Landbridge.
Oh, are you kidding?
Yeah.
Excellent.
I got a
What's
honey.
The name of your boat, Ryan?
Gertrude.
Man, Ryan's so dead serious. He's like, name your boat? Are you guys kindergarten?
Misdemeanor.
Misdemeanor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it'll fit on the road.
Oh,
hey,
my
I got a
goodness.
Honey of a canoe that you didn't mention. It's a locally made canoe.
Oh.
Yeah.
Does it have a name?
Turns on a dime. Two Brothers Canoe is that's
okay.
what's on the side of
made
it.
Made locally,
it's
you
locally,
think?
Making Arkansas? It up in Rogers, yeah.
Really? Two Brothers
They're
Canoe?
They're sweet canoes.
Okay. Question number three. For the last how many miles does the river's bed lie below sea level?
120.
It's 15
okay,
foot
that
below
question,
at Vicksburg.
That question probably could have been worded with a little more clarity.
Come on, Trebek.
How many miles up the river is the river below sea level? This was stated twice on the podcast.
How many miles up the river
is
the river?
50
miles.
What if we can tell you how deep it is at Vicksburg?
50 miles.
Yeah, you can guess.
New Orleans.
Well, the answer lies in how far Vicksburg is from the coast.
Was it 400 and something?
Come on.
420, 450.
Higher
450. Right. Foot face scrub.
Are you kidding me?
Big
I wasn't congratulating
grab.
You. What are you talking about?
I had to help you out. Yeah. So for the last 450 miles of the Mississippi River, the bottom of the river is below
pretty amazing.
Sea level.
Like, not a little. in like 240 foot. Is that what they said? In
well, okay, spot? No, there was a 240 feet, but that it's 15 feet below sea level in Vicksburg, in like 170 at the mouth of the river. Did you guys understand why I needed clarity? Like, that's I felt like John Barry kind of dismissed me when he was like, yeah, it's always been like that.
Yeah.
but I thought perhaps it was because, you know, Dr. Biedenharn, he told me, he's like, when man puts his foot in the river, a river system is so dynamic. Any water, flowing water system is incredibly dynamic. And if you put your foot in the river in St. Louis,
anywhere,
it affects, you know, this is
right.
Hyperbole.
Hyperbolic.
Yeah, there you go.
Exaggeration to make a point. Put your foot in the river in St. Louis, it affects New Orleans.
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe the river being that far below sea level was something that we had done. Because what we probably won't get into, because it's just too boring, but it's also too exciting not to talk about, is all the ways that they... I mean, you could write books on the Mississippi River Commission and levees, jetties, and outlets. So there was this huge controversy in the country for 50 years about how to tame the Mississippi River, and there was a levees only crew. There were these guys that were like, levees only, that's the way to do it. And then there were other people that wanted levees and outlets. And basically the levees only thing failed because of the 1927 flood. And it like was the biggest natural disaster in American history.
Johnny Cash wrote a song about it.
Did he really?
How high is the water, Papa?
And that's about the 1927 flood? Oh, dude, that's big. I didn't know that.
Big River and that song are my two favorite Johnny Cash.
My grandpa.
And I'm not even a potomologist.
My grandfather went to Southeast Arkansas when he was born in 1913. That happened in 27. So he was 14. And he went down there to help recover folks and flood victims.
How far over did it get? How far west did it go?
They went to Lake Village, which is right there on
the river.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He said it was horrible.
Wow. Well, we are going to talk more about the 1927 flood and different ways they did things. But
on a different podcast?
Yeah, on some of the later ones. So we'll save that. So 450 miles up, it's below
Good
sea
job,
level.
Big money.
Yeah. Okay. What is the term for a river whose banks are mobile and shift, meandering and weaving through its floodplain?
Like alluvial.
Bam. Thalwag. An alluvial river. Yeah, an alluvial river. Its banks are mobile and shift. It meanders and weaves through its floodplain.
Josh, did you even listen to this?
I did.
Josh is looking a little glassy eyed.
Yeah, I know.
Josh,
the answer's over land bridge. You got
Josh's daughter got married this weekend.
Yeah, my daughter got married this weekend. We had a fantastic time, but man, marrying off a kid is a lot of work.
We were tired and we didn't even do anything.
We just celebrated.
Yes.
All right. For Josh's oldest daughter getting married, we're giving him one bonus point.
Told you, cheater.
Okay. Question number four. The current score is 2 for Thalwag Spencer, 1 for Ryan Flint Frey Scrabb, and 1 for Brent This Country Life Reeves.
And 0 for Josh.
0 for Misty.
Okay. The Mississippi and the Amazon rivers are the only two major rivers to not have this.
Dams.
A dam.
Well, it needs a little more clarity. Where
at the mouth.
Bam.
The mouth.
Josh Landbrig's Spillmaker wins.
2 points.
2,400.
Yeah. So what Dr. Kilgore with 2 L's said was that the Mississippi and the Amazon were the only of the big rivers of the world that don't have a dam at their mouth, which is a pretty big deal. And you know what? I didn't want to say this on the podcast because it kind of ruins the buzz about the Mississippi River. But those guys talked about the Amazon. The Amazon is the beast of planet Earth.
Yes.
Like the Mississippi River is like pretty small in comparison to the Amazon. Like it's not like the flow on a big flood day for the Mississippi River, I want to say, is around 4.5 cubic 4.5 million cubic feet per
second
day that comes out of the mouth of the Mississippi River, which means imagine a 1 foot by 1 foot by 1 foot cube of water. You understand that, Ms. Newcomb?
Doctor.
Okay. Yes, you condescend.
Can you visualize that?
No. I just know sometimes.
Careful. Just stop talking.
Yep. Okay, imagine that. And imagine 450 million of those little boxes flowing past you.
Are we talking too fast?
Oh, my gosh.
No, Steve Rinella gave a great example about, he said it would be like seeing 4.5 million soccer balls go past you. The soccer ball is about 1 cubic foot. I thought that was a good
example.
Well,
didn't they say that would supply Texas for
a couple of
year?
Days? Like two days.
Wow.
But the Amazon has 20 million cubic feet per
five
day
times.
At high water.
Wow.
But what's interesting about the Amazon is that all the other big rivers of the world, like the Nile, Mississippi, the Congo, the Yangtze, the Ganges, what's it called?
Yangtze. We're representing our major here.
Yeah, well.
Dale Bumpers.
Environmental science. Most of those rivers run north and south for the most part.
Yeah.
The Amazon runs east and west, or it runs from the west to the east, but it runs across the widest part of the South American continent. And so it is just has this huge drainage basin, and it's very little is developed around the Amazon. So there's very few, maybe no. I don't want to say how many dams, but it's relatively an undammed river.
Christy Spielmaker's been to the Amazon.
Has she really?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to go to the Amazon.
That's pretty.
You
want
to go? Position.
Heck yes.
Who here would like to go to the Amazon?
I do. And
can
with
you fly
a fly rod,
in the
Ryan's
yeah,
in,
peacock catch like a 200-pound fish.
Yeah,
yeah. Nice. Man, hey, my friend Keith Sutton. Down in central Arkansas, who is he's kind of a legendary hunting, fishing writer. He, for a time, was going down to the Amazon quite a bit, and he caught an undiscovered freshwater stingray that no one had ever documented.
Really?
He was crazy. Down there fishing one year and caught this stingray, and he pulled it up. Or he saw it. Maybe he pulled it up to the boat and it got off, but he had a real good look at it. And he goes back to America and starts researching, and there's nothing.
Yeah.
And he's like, I know what I saw. The next year he goes back. It's a version of this story that's similar to this, okay? This may not be word for word.
So you may be misrepresenting him.
I mean, a little bit, but it's possible. I just want to say
close.
That because I've recorded him tell this story before, so you could go back and actually hear it from him. On the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast with Keith Sutton. But the next year, he goes back down there to the exact spot he lost that fish. And within like 10 minutes, catches another one. I'm serious. He did. He went
That's
and caught
crazy.
It. And it was a 200-pound freshwater stingray that had never been documented by science.
They name it after him?
I don't think they named it after him. But he was able to get in touch with a fish guy that they believe that somebody in the 1800s had documented it one time, but that's all they had seen, so it was never.
That's crazy.
But it's just like that kind of stuff can still happen on the Amazon River.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was. It was. I thought it was crazy. So, Josh, your score is 2.
You don't have 2.
1 and like a mercy point.
At least, my extra points were awarded by someone else and not myself, like Brent.
This time.
Yeah, Brent.
I feel like this is the kind of thing
one.
I talk to my kids about.
No, I got 2.
Okay, question number 5. How long did it take the Europeans to revisit the Mississippi River after DeSoto discovered
120.
It? 120 years.
Yes. Nice
did
work,
y'all
Brent.
Like hearing what Mark Twain thought about that?
Yeah, that was really good.
Gap?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting, and
I was
it's pretty
reading.
Fat. It's wild to think that DeSoto saw it, and it was 120 years.
But isn't that like that's the thing with rivers? We take them for granted.
Yeah,
you know, you just see a river and you think, nah, it's just a river. You see a mountain, and everybody wants to name it and climb it.
Yeah, but yeah, it's true.
I don't know.
Well, but when Mark Twain put it in the context, as he said, that entire time there were people.
Yeah.
On the East Coast, you know, there were Europeans that were about around and about on the East Coast. And then they still didn't even know where that river went. Okay.
There was some good stuff in that book.
Yeah.
Life on the Mississippi. And I sent you, I was actually reading that at your
suggestion. Yeah, I used that section that you.
When we started, and then is it a spoiler if I read that thing that I sent you the other day that I laughed at?
That was
out
in
loud?
The part that I.
Mm-mm.
Well, you know what?
You skipped over it.
I skipped over it. Yeah, read it.
Yeah, my favorite part of that whole, and that, it was actually in that same paragraph. Mark Twain said, if somebody should discover a creek in the county next to the one that the North Pole is in, Europe and America would start 15 costly expeditions thither. One to explore the creek and the other 14 to hunt for each other. that made me laugh out loud because that's so true.
And in 1883, that's what was going on. Yeah. That book was written in 1883.
Yeah.
So, like, there was some genuine exploration going on in this continent, unlike is going on today, you know. They were exploring land like today we're exploring technology.
Yeah, yeah.
If you think about, like, Elon Musk and these people doing wild stuff, going to the moon, making electric cars, making ChatGPT, and we're kind of like, wow, the frontier. You know, this back then it was, what's that direction? We don't really know.
Yeah. The actual frontier.
That's not the best analogy, but you guys get it. Okay, according to Dr. Bidenhorn, the deepest point of the river is how many feet deep? Bam, Thalwag.
I'll give that to Misty.
I definitely knew
that
one.
You waited, didn't you?
Huh?
I
did because I like to hear the whole question.
That's not Spence's fault.
No, it's not Spence's fault.
Last question.
I feel a little bad.
You can have it.
This question.
Can we take a half point?
Don't know. It's all yours. It's all yours. You said it first.
Neighbor share.
Rules, you know.
I think he chugged a Red Bull before this question.
Okay, what year was the Mississippi River Commission formed? This is kind of a boring question.
It is, and I still don't know the answer.
1887.
1948.
And that's what I was going to say, 1948, too, but I think there was a war.
Wrong. I don't feel bad if I take a wrong answer.
It was 100 years before the year of my birth.
1879.
Bam, Miss Newcomb. Dr. Newcomb,
I finally
gets
get one.
It.
I get one.
All right, so who won? There it is. Who won?
Me.
Thalwag?
I think it was
I had five.
No, you didn't. Terrell Thalwag, Spencer.
I'm surprised that the question of how many miles free flowing water.
That's a great one.
Which I'm fully expecting Isaac Neal to walk in here with that tattoo.
Yeah. For what did y'all think about the tattoo suggestion? 2400
with
Muddy
the eagle.
River.
The eagle. Yeah. Was it an eagle or a hawk?
Eagle.
Was it an bald
eagle? Yeah. I had a lot of people. There's a lot of hype around that the Mississippi River should have been called the Missouri River because the Missouri River is longer than the Mississippi. And people say things such as the Mississippi's river is not great until the Missouri comes in.
I got a question.
Okay.
I think it said that there was not a dam on the Missouri River for
1,200
miles.
Yeah, that's what it said.
Why is that? I don't know anything about the Missouri River, so compare it to the Arkansas, and you don't come very far out of the Mississippi until you get to, what's the first one? Is it Murray?
No, down at Dumas.
Dumas?
Yeah.
I don't understand what would make the decisions around not dam.
Is there not commerce or commercial on that like there is the Arkansas River?
I don't know.
Don't know.
I really don't know. That's a good question.
Are the Arkansas dams navigation-wise, or are they power? It's mostly navigation, right?
Yeah, mostly navigation.
Yeah, I think they go as far as Tulsa, maybe, on the Arkansas River.
Yeah. Some rivers, it could be there's some, I don't know. I don't even know enough to, I'll figure out the answer, though, because that's a good question.
You don't get no point.
I get zero.
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 You know, whenever I look at pictures of my kids from the past year or even just a few months ago, I'm so amazed at how fast they're growing up, and then it hits me hard. I'm getting older too. That's why planning for my family's financial security has become a top priority. Making sure we're prepared and having enough life insurance in case something unexpected happens and I'm out of the picture is crucial. And Fabric by Gerber Life makes it simple to get the protection that's right for your family. Fabric by Gerber Life was designed by parents and for parents to help you get a high quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. You could go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. There's no risk to apply. They have a 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can cancel at any time. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/bear. That's M-E-E-T, fabric.com/bear, meetfabric.com/bear. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released, so head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a gobbling turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this spring.
You know, I'm going to have to say this again. I'm going to address this again in an actual Bear Grease podcast in a probably a tighter way. But I think naming rivers is really interesting because rivers are named typically from their mouth.
The bottom.
And the way this country was settled by the Europeans that came here, it was settled from east to west. So the people came to this land that the Native Americans, the Quapaws, called Arkansas, and they found this giant river. And so they said the Arkansas River. And then when they went up to where the Arkansas River started, it was in Colorado.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in theory, it seems like there's more namesake. This is the Colorado River. Started in Colorado, but just simply based upon where the people, the direction the people were coming from when they named it. And that's exactly why the Missouri River is called the Missouri River and not the where's the headwaters of the Missouri in Montana or Wyoming?
Yeah.
I'm not even sure.
I think it was Montana.
I think it's Montana. Yeah. You know, and so the Mississippi was kind of the same way that most of the interaction with that river was down in the lower part of the river, and with LaSalle and these guys, you know, LaSalle and DeTante were the first guys to, it was a transliteration, meaning that it was a word in a different language that we just kind of were like, Mississippi.
What was
it? Sounds like they're saying
Indian way.
Man, it was tough. I struggled with that.
More than cholera.
It was two words. Yeah, more than
that. Thought he had cholera.
It was. I didn't really do it justice. There were multiple. There's so many ways that.
Yeah.
But it was Miche, Sipakue or
I've got a question. How confident are you that I'm
the pronunciation of that?
Uh-huh. Oh,
high. Woo. Very high. You like that?
Golf club.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very high.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And
how confident were you of cholera?
Low.
And he had a fever.
Hey, what I like to think about these things. What did it make you think when it was suggested on Bear Grease that maybe one day the Mississippi River won't be called the Mississippi?
And just how our society will be forgotten, like the Catahoukians or all the others.
Yeah.
That was I was cleaning out a chicken brooder at the time, and that was a thinker.
Yeah.
I can tell you where I was at. I was checking
like
my JFK. Corn.
Wow, where were you at?
Yeah, this is a touchstone for our generation.
When we talked about renaming them.
When you realized you were insignificant.
Well, I mean, that's the point. Think about the great civilizations. There were incredible civilizations. You know, this whole idea
that we came into a
wilderness is just untrue. These people walked into great civilizations that looked different than European cities. Right. We translated as wilderness. And these people had, I mean, they knew what that river was called. And then here we are, a couple hundred, 500 years later, we're guessing at what they called it. And we're not even calling it what they called it. We're calling it what it sounds like they called it. You know, they called it the Michisupakani or whatever, Michisipi or whatever.
The ones that survived.
Right.
And there's, yeah.
And then this Peter Pitchland, the Choctaw, he, in this letter, this official, it was a letter that was.
Is he the one that said that we always pronounced everything wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he was like, heck, they didn't even get the transliteration right. It was this, meaning the river without any age. And, you can just imagine how loosely translated some of that stuff was. And so, I just thought it was an interesting thought.
All that will remain will be our plastic.
Yep.
Water bottles. Yeah. Water bottles and
styrofoam
grocery stacks. So.
Yeah. Yeah. What stood out to you most, Misty, about that podcast?
Well,
what you learned?
My favorite part was actually the very beginning, hearing John Barry read the poem. I thought that was pretty amazing. Pretty
strong brown god.
And my second favorite part was hearing Hank Burdine, his voice described as the voice, what a crocodile.
Oh, alligator.
Yeah. Alligator,
yeah.
That was pretty good description.
Yeah.
After did he do the voiceover for Foghorn Leghorn?
That's two podcasts, I think, in a row with good descriptions. Because the other was Davy Crockett, where he talked about being like a wildcat and was it half out wildcat? Whatever it is,
that was Crockett's description of himself.
And the Arkansans as being the half man,
half alligator, half horse.
That's right.
My middle son, we're like, that's you, buddy.
Yeah. I thought John Barry's intro was cool. That was his favorite poem, and I asked him if he would read it for me, and he read it. Brent, what stood out to you? What was your favorite part?
I like talking to, and I still can't remember how you say it.
Biedenharn?
Yeah, Dr. Biedenharn.
Brent was with me when I went down there.
We went. It was cool, man. That whole complex is, it's pretty cool to get in there and talk to those folks. But he talked about a lot of stuff that I'm sure that won't be out there because it's just, man, it was so technical.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was really the best thing that I wish that people that are listening to this could have been there watching him talk about it, because visiting with somebody and watching them talk about something that they're very passionate about, and he can spend his whole life studying that thing, and to me he looks like he's just as excited to talk about it today. How long has he been down there? Years, 30 or 40 years he's been doing
at least.
He seems to be just as excited about it now as he was then. But him talking about that revetment, one of the questions I got right in the challenge that Josh didn't get, how cool that was that it scoured out 60 feet below that thing, and then before they could get in there and do something about it, he'd filled back in 40 feet.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and it was, but that's going on everywhere, all the time in that thing. It's the river is changing. How he talked about it, he talked about it like it was an animal, mm-hmm. you know, like it had life to it. And I guess it does in that way, because it's always changing and growing and going with it. I don't know. It was really cool just to sit there and listen to that guy who really knows his stuff.
Beating horn.
Yeah.
Brian, what stood out to you?
Was it Burdine you were in the boat with?
Mm-hmm.
The very first thing you hear before anything is spoken is the tilt trim switch.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, here's a guy that is hands-on. He's immersed in the river. He's on it while he's talking about it. So I'm thinking, this is a big deal to this guy. He was probably born and raised and is on it day in, day out. So I was really entertained by his conversation.
Yeah. He's a cool guy. He's a cool guy. Hey, you got to tell me, but we're going to end with you telling us your best near-death story on a big river, Ryan. Be thinking about it. Spence, what stood out to you? Excuse me, Thalwag.
Thalwag.
I lit up like a Christmas tree when I heard that word.
He's the farmer, formerly known as Spence.
Yeah. That and potomologist. So, but no, when he was talking about just a river's ability to do work, and he talked about slope, and he talked about volume, and you know, I couldn't help but thinking of, you know, we've got a creek in our holler, we've got our farmland where the river runs through it. And I just think of floods. You know, I've been at this on our properties for a long time now. And, you know, I've seen some big floods. I don't know. That's where my mind goes. And then extrapolating that to the Mississippi, when you talk, you know, like when you look at old maps and you see how much it's changed, and I don't know what you're going to talk about in the future. Like a lot of this was me. I really am interested in this. So I was like, ooh, I hope Clay talks about that. I hope this is a 10-part series. Yeah, you know, I'm all in nerd, y'all. But I enjoyed that. So like just all the scratches. I mean, it was almost like you're going on a deli tray with a sampler platter, all the little things you tap. And maybe you'll get into them, maybe you're not. But I don't know. It was just tangent after tangent in my mind. And then I really liked when he called it the Fourth Coast.
Yeah, I've never heard that.
Punk rock, they used to call like the West Coast the Left Coast. So like, I don't know. It just like it made me chuckle him calling it the Fourth Coast. It'd be a good T-shirt.
Fourth Coast. Is it the Fourth Coast? Yeah, old Hank. Yeah, that's good, Josh.
I'm always fascinated, and my family makes fun of me because they're like, "Oh, Dad's doing math again." But I love, I love the statistics. Just like the 2,400 miles without a dam, all the soil that gets moved, all the volume of water, it boggles my mind. And I mean, honestly, it makes me more amazed at our Creator. Mm-hmm. And when I think about this stuff, like to design this, and it makes me, you know, I was out on the river this morning, and I took a couple of guys that were in town for my daughter's wedding, and I took them up to the dam. And the dams we have here in Arkansas are pretty impressive structures. I mean, they're amazing structures. And then to think about the Mississippi River and how we've learned to utilize it, it puts me in a state of awe a little bit, that we've been able to harness a lot of the power of that and use it for our lives. And I think I loved how you talked about finding out how the Mississippi affects our lives. Like we don't really know. Yeah. And so to just break it down and make it evident for us is really interesting to me.
There was a quote where it talked about trying to master it's like hubris. What was that? Do you remember that quote?
Well, John Barry, a lot in his book, Rising Tide, talked about the hubris that it took for man to even think he could tame the river.
Yeah. And we've got a bridge in our county that has washed out repeatedly, and they just keep adding more and more concrete to it. And there's a part of me that rejoices every time
it washes out
and ends up, parts of it end up on my property, because I'll never learn. But I don't know. It's just that hubris, you know, and the amount of force and power, and it looks so simple, but they're so deep, and there's so much under the surface in a river, and it really, like, I'd be curious to hear your stories, because if you've ever been out on a body of water and realize you shouldn't be out there, it becomes really quick, really fast.
Yes.
Or really apparent really fast how powerful those rivers and water bodies are.
Yeah. You know, I think to me, the what I wanted to communicate and what I'm maybe most interested in is I want people to understand the complexity of a river system.
Yeah.
When I was in college, I took a stream ecology class, and I was blown away by the complexity of even just a gravel-based stream like here in the Ozarks. Like if you remove this gravel, what it does downstream, and even more so on a big, giant river that drains 41% of a continent. And I thought John Barry is an excellent writer, and when he took the quote about the physicist, that was from his book. Like he talked about the physicist that said, when I get to heaven, I've got two questions for God.
Oh, yeah.
Why relativity and why turbulence? And I think he can answer the first, insinuating that
nobody knows.
Nobody knows. Yeah. And just the turbulence being this mysterious force, unpredictable force that comes about with free flowing stuff like water or air. And it's just so difficult to calculate, and the sediment loads of the river and how big it is and how it moves. And it really is like a beast.
It's
and
an organism.
Like I said on the podcast, if the river were a great beast and the banks were its skeleton and the floodplain were its flesh, the water would be its blood and the dirt would be the life in the blood. And how that dirt is basically has built the entire delta of from like Memphis down, like the Gulf of Mexico used to come all the way up into the Ozarks.
Yeah. How about him talking about topsoil, the depth of topsoil in most places as compared to the alluvial plain down there?
Yeah.
Are you going to cover the fact that we're like shotgunning all that out into the Gulf like later on?
I will. That's a whole, there's some major ecological problems down at the mouth of the Mississippi River. Yeah. I will, but not in detail, honestly.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about.
I get it.
It's so complex.
Maybe a private podcast for me.
Clint. Yeah, private.
Thalwags edition.
Ryan, have you almost died on a big river?
I don't want to say died, but probably done some stupid stuff when I was younger, duck hunting.
Yeah.
When the river is flooded, too small of boats, too much current, trying to drive across flooded rock jetties to get to the other side to duck hunt, and thinking, you know, as the trucks push sideways, you're thinking later.
This is a bad decision.
If it would have kept sliding, I'd been 15, 20 foot under the white water.
What do you mean, the truck?
Water running across
a levee, and you're trying to go from
drive across it.
Drive across the levee to another
point.
And it was stupid, you know.
Hey, do you have a specific story or no? Brent,
no,
you too?
Not really.
You don't? Okay.
No. I try to be pretty self.
I told about that story on one of my podcasts about my brother and I getting hung up on the Arkansas River in a bad storm. You know, we made it out to a sandbar in the middle of the river and run the boat up on the bank. This cloud had a big storm had come through and gone, and we're still before daylight. And we look up and we see stars. We think it's fine. We're good to go. We get in the boat. We go up the river. Then another storm's coming behind it. So it's water gets, waves are coming over the front of the boat. So when the wind blows up a river, when it blows against the current, this makes the waves bad.
Because the current's going down, but the wind is
pushing it up,
so it's going against each other.
Yeah, this was like
3 foot waves.
3 foot swells were coming over the front of that boat. It was a 16 foot John boat that was 52 inches wide. And it was like a cork floating out there. So we hit a sandbar as fast as we could go and got off of it, and lightning is popping all around, the wind's blowing like crazy, and And finally it stopped. The lightning stuff stopped, and it got daylight where we could see. And we killed like one or two ducks, and then we got back in the boat and
scared you to death
and got home. Yeah, it was tough. It was.
Have y'all ever seen like a canoe that's been pinned when you're paddling or wrapped around a tree?
Yeah, well,
you try to pull it out and you realize how much force is in that river.
There's Josh and I saw a boat,
an old John boat wrapped around a tree.
But I've seen big, big boats like
that
on the Arkansas, big commercial size fishing boats that are just wrapped around like nothing.
I know Misty probably don't want to hear this, but if you remember, two, 3 years ago, there was five of us in my 18-foot duck boat.
One of them was one of my children.
Many of your children.
There was five of us, and a live well, has a big live well in it that was full of water, full of fish for them to bring home. And we kept watching this cell come from the, what was it, north, northeast?
Well, what threw us off was that it was coming from the east, and we thought, it was already past us.
Gotcha.
Because the weather usually in this part of the world comes from west to east. Mm-hmm. And so we were looking back to the west, and the clouds were, there was no storm. But to the east, there was a storm, and I thought it was a storm that was kind of moving from the north to the southeast, and we're just seeing the tail of it. But actually, it was it was blowing from the east and coming on us hard.
And that's the way the river's flowing down to the east. The wind's coming out of the east. So,
That's
tough. And it was actually didn't start with any rollers. It started with 3-foot breakers.
Yeah,
with a loaded boat, and we should have stayed put. We should have stayed.
Really?
Yeah, we should have.
Yeah.
But once you get halfway back,
we had probably 3 miles or so to get back home,
and actually took a detour into a bay to get out of the wind. That I know probably wasn't 3 foot deep, and I'm thinking, I hope I don't hit a stump.
Yeah.
But we made it back.
So. I remember. So while that is going on, guess what Flint Face looked like?
Just
the no same
expression.
As he always does. Yep.
No expression. Lieutenant Dan up in that crow's nest.
That's all you got.
we're just like, just getting soaking wet. And I'm kind of looking back at Ryan to see if he looks nervous. And we don't really even talk. I mean, we just go back to the boat ramp. And once we get out, I go, hey, Ryan, was that pretty sketchy? And he was like, that was pretty sketchy. That reminded me of the time when I rode with Warner Glenn up a big mountain. I've told this story so many times. I rode with Warner Glenn, followed him up a mountain on a mule. And it was the absolute wildest mule ride of my life. And that night over dinner, and he never even looked back to see if I was still there. And when I got to dinner that night, I said, Mr. Warner, if you were ranking mule rides and a 0 was riding down a gravel road and a 10 was that you died, what did we do this morning? And he went, probably about a 7 or 8. And I was like, good, thank God. He said, yeah, if it had been much worse than that, you just couldn't have taken him up there, Clay. Like, it never even occurred to him that we'd done something wild that day.
That was Tuesday.
That was like when I was with Ryan. He was like, yeah, it was pretty sketchy. Hey, thanks so much. Cross the Creek Farms. If you're in the Northwest Arkansas region, how can they buy chicken from you?
Just crossthecreekfarm.com.
Man, pasture raised, best chicken on the earth.
It really is.
Yeah.
Milling our own feed now.
Only thing we'll eat.
Yeah, man.
And tomatoes for the neighbors.
For chickens.
Brought some tomatoes. Check out This Country Life podcast. Landbridge, you selling anything?
Just tell them to hit me up. I'll sell them something.
If you see something Josh has that you want, just hit him up. Ryan, thanks for coming up, man.
I appreciate it. You know, legend has it that Robert Redford is jealous of Josh's mustache.
That ain't no legend. That's a fact.
Ms. Newcomb, thank you.
You're welcome.
Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we've already done right. Maybe you finally organized one part of your space and you want to tackle another. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you actually want to eat breakfast. In the last year, I've been more diligent about going to the gym on a regimented schedule, and it's made a lot of difference in my life. Therapy helps you find your strengths so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greece today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Greece.